This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and you can find me at Conkers 3. And today's date is the 30th of April. We're doing it live on a Tuesday. And I've got my two co-hosts. I feel comfortable again now. I was a bit nervy in the last podcast. I've got Henry Viola here with me. You can find him at HC Viola on Twitter. And I've got the man of the hour, Phil Oakley's back, sorted his sinuses out. He's got sprays, he's got gels, he's got everything. He's all dosed up. He's back. The treble, the trio, we're back now. So Henry, Phil, hello and welcome, sirs.
Nice to be back, Peter.
Nice to have you back, Henry.
Yeah, Phil, good to be back.
Phil's nodding and not saying much. He's saving his vocal cords for the pod, guys. Okay. But before I go any further, I've got to say a massive, massive thank you to Jason Needham at StealthServe, the small and mid-cap trend follower, private investor, chartist, technical analyst, you name it, absolutely smashed it in the last pod and got loads and loads of feedback, as did Jamie W, who's, I think is, we asked people to follow Jamie at Jamie CW on Twitter. I think his number of followers has gone up by nearly 100. So he's gone up by about 45, 50% since he was on the show. So very, very well done, all of you, ladies and gents, that have decided to follow the fund manager that is Jamie Ward. And we look forward to possibly having Jamie back on when I take a leave of absence, maybe, because I'm needing a break at some point as well. And I'm sure Henry's going to want his holidays and Phil will be traveling around the world, no doubt, at some point or other. Because as you can see, Phil's, those of you on YouTube now can see Phil in his glory. He's caught a tan. He's almost as dark as me, folks, if you can believe that. Anyway, enough of me amusing. Let's go on with the show. Phil, what have you been seeing in the markets, mate, before I go on to talk about the volatility of the FTSE and what's been happening since the last pod?
I mean, you know, short answer is nobody really knows, but the sort of, My sort of feel is that we're in a bit of a headwind as far as the market's concerned globally. If you take the view that that most stock markets take their key off the US stock market, it seems to me now that the US market's hit a bit of a brick wall, primarily because everybody thought at the start of the year that was going to be lots of interest rate cuts. And now it seems that there aren't, you know, it looks like it's a pretty good bet that there aren't going to be any. And, you know, you've had a very, very strong rally in the market, very strong first quarter. And, you know, you now got a valuation of the S&P 500, which was about 21 times forecast earnings, but you've also got interest rates are actually moving up, bond yields, the price of government debt is moving up, and that's crucial because everything is priced off that. So that the lower those yields go, the higher markets tend to go, and the opposite way around. And I think there's some genuine concern now that, you know, governments across the world are spending lots of money and they're not covering it with the tax that they take in. So there's a lot of bonds coming onto the market. And I think the worry is now is that flood of supply and refinancing of existing bonds is potentially going to put interest rates higher. Regardless of what the Federal Reserve does, the market interest rate, which is set by investors buying and selling bonds, that looks like it's moving up. Well, it is moving up. And I think if it gets over 5%, I think, you know, the markets could could come off quite significantly. So I think it's hard now to, it's like riding a bike. A bull market's like riding a bike downhill with the wind on your back. It feels easy. It feels great. You think, oh, I like this, enjoying this. And now I feel like you've turned around and you're coming back a different way now. You're into the wind and maybe even going slightly uphill. And therefore it's a lot harder. So I think we're in quite a difficult patch. And I think that's gonna require I can see now perhaps a change in the theme in the market away from sort of growth stocks, maybe back towards value stocks. And I think this is possibly a reason or one of the reasons why the FTSE 100 has actually done relatively quite well. And it wouldn't surprise me that now that the UK market, after being, a laggard, a cast off in terms of global stock markets for a long time, actually comes into favour now.
Made some very, very, very interesting points there, Phil. I want to pick you up on a couple before I go to Henry. And one of the major issues you touched on, we touched on a few major issues there, bonds, but the refinancing of debt and the refinancing process that's going on, that's going to cause everyone a headache because the interest rates versus what they were refinancing at 2 years ago, 3 years ago is a vastly different environment. So all entities are struggling with that particular issue, aren't they? And they're trying to edge things out and push things further and further away when they have to repay debt, and it's getting more and more difficult. But one of the things that happened last Friday was the market just absolutely went, well, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of last week, markets went wappy. And on Friday, the sentiment indicator, we've gone from February, March time when it was fearful. Everyone was like, oh, not sure about the markets. I think it's all done and dusted. April wasn't too bad, and then latter part of March wasn't too bad. This month has been really, really good, and the latter part of last week was really good. We went to extreme greed, Phil, that fear indicator. Yeah, we just went like that. Whoosh, we're over here on last Friday in this extreme greed where things were hitting 52-week highs and we're up 50% year to date, and so on and so forth, and so many stocks were getting what absolutely pushed higher and higher, and everyone was buying, everyone's coming out. People that had not been on Twitter slash X had come back to tell people how well they were doing that we've not seen for 6 months or 9 months, which is great. We'd love to see people come back, and the market's been kind to them. But people were buying stuff they didn't want to buy in January, February at 30, 40, 50% higher, in the UK markets because of the market was going up. So that to me is a psychological flaw, I think, when people are chasing stuff because FOMO's got them. And I'd rather be the contrarian where I'm looking to be in the markets when things aren't doing so well and look for other things that are unloved. But I think there's a issue we've got here with what you've said, in the sense of there's going to be a push and pull, a bit of a tug of war, Phil, with the markets. And you might be right that the UK wins out, but we've gotten major elections in the UK and major elections in the US, and neither governments are going to want the markets to be going like that during the election year. And in the latter part, September through to December, in election years, markets tend to do well. What we do between then and now, I don't know. Thoughts on that before you go to Henry? Go on, Phil.
It's difficult to say. I think the thing with the interest rates, it's interesting about interest rates now. We've actually started to see mortgage rates go up again in the UK Monday, Tuesday this week. I think the other point to bear in mind with the bond market, which I know is a bit of a dry subject, but it's absolutely crucial. If you're an investor, you've got to try and understand the bond market because everything gets priced off that. And the big difference now to like a couple of years ago is that, when the governments were like issuing bonds because they had to borrow money to finance their spending, they had central bankers buying them through quantitative easing. They were the buyers. Now the central banks are actually sellers of bonds. So, it's the real thing is like who's going to buy these bonds and at what price? And I can't help feeling that there's a lot of complacency amongst the sort of general investing community about what's going on in the bond market. I think because it's always managed to scrape through these dangerous periods, people assume that it'll be okay. And maybe it will be okay. But yeah, it's I think something you've got to keep an eye on more than ever now.
Agreed, agreed. Anyway, any thoughts regarding markets and what's been happening in the past two, 3 weeks, mate?
Yeah, I mean, I've a little bit like Phil, been watching the bond market with sort of through half closed eyes, to be perfectly honest. I mean, the US is adding debt on it at an absolutely astonishing rate, and the UK seems to be, everybody wants to spend more money. We want more money for defence and more money for the NHS, and we want tax cuts, and we want to abolish national insurance, and on and on and on these spending pledges go. And at the same time, the tax base isn't expanding. We're just taxing the existing base incrementally slightly more. And there is going to come a point where the middle class can't afford to keep paying. The rich will move offshore, the poor won't be paying enough, and the middle class will be squeezed. And at that point, the bond market will fall over, I think, because there aren't going to be buyers of gilts, because investors are going to worry that governments can't fund the repayments. I don't know at what point that happens, but that point does exist. It's a very real threat for economies. And interestingly, we were just talking about how markets had quite a strong April, and they have. And I've been using that opportunity really to look at my portfolio and clear out some of the laggards, start to identify positions that, I've held for 2 or 3 years. They've not really performed, they've not done what I've wanted them to do. And I'm using some of the strength in the market to perhaps move out of those positions because, frankly, I don't want to be holding them if the market takes another nosedive because the bond market has a panic.
Yeah, good point. I mean, I got rid of one of my laggards today. I'm not sure if you hold it or not, but I took an absolute pasting, been very, very patient with it, and then I had to go, I'm done now. When a company warns you twice that there's no guarantee of our certainty going forward in the space of 6 months, you've got to say, you know what, maybe I've got this one wrong. And do I want to wait 2 years for them to sort it out when they may not even make it to the end of the journey? So yeah. DGI 9 got chinned on it, took a big loss, walked away. Good luck to everybody else that holds it, and hopefully the company sort themselves out over the next two years or so. But I can invest that money somewhere else and do better than them in the next 2 years, I think. So leave it there. Right. So the markets today, I was talking in the podcast before last with you guys, and also with Jason and Jamie about the markets. I was hoping that during April they'd hit the magic 8,000, and they hadn't, right? And then lo and behold, within a couple of days of the podcast going out, not obviously not down just to the podcast, but other people buying in the markets, I must caveat that, we hit the 8,000, and then we carried on up until last week, carried on even higher. As I was saying, sentiment was buoyant Thursday and Friday of last week. And that was despite last week the US markets having a little hiccup, which touches on what Phil was saying about we carried on despite the US market getting absolutely walloped on a couple of days last week. So Friday, the markets did really well. Monday, that continued. We had an intraday high on Monday, 29th, of 8,189 versus the low of 8,136. We closed at 8,147. Previous close on the Friday was 8,139. So just up 7 points. Today, prior to the US markets opening, we hit another intraday high of 8,199.95. Just so close to that magic 8,200 intraday high. And then the US started to wobble. Bit of news there, bit of news there. Bosh. We're getting carried on the wave of Elon Musk visiting China and Tesla shares going up, and the American markets were trying to find their feet. And then today just gave away. So it went from a high of 8,199. We had an intraday low of 8,138. And we finished at 8,145, just down a point there. But down all, despite, you know, we gave up, what, 54 points in the latter part of the day-ish? Everything across the board, every single segment of the UK market today was negative for the first time in a couple, well, I'd say about a week and a bit. All of them were down. So I'm not saying we've peaked, but they've had a bit of a today because of the US markets. AIM closed down just a couple of points at 761. Still, you know, it's now above the 700 and back above the 750. It's sitting at 761. So we'll see what happens. But we need to hold on to this 8,000 as long as we can, I think, until some more news comes out. Quite a few more takeovers. Current situation in the market is a stock that I hold, Anglo-American. BHP have come out and said they want to buy it. So we're going to see what goes on with that. It's all about copper, electrification, and so on and so forth. My personal view is, having done the assessment on its intrinsic parts, that it's worth a minimum 28. It came out and offered 25 initially. 25 pounds, should I say. 28 pounds is what I think its minimum bid was going to take to take it off the table. If they can get over all the geopolitics, which I think is going to be, take them a bit of a while. But today there's analysts coming out saying it's going to take BHP 30 pounds to take out Anglo-American. And that's if Glencore or Rio don't get involved in the mix. So more M&A. Bill, what are your thoughts historically regarding mega mergers? Because they don't tend to work out, do they?
Well, I mean, a lot of mergers don't, big mergers don't work out. I mean, a lot of them stack up on a spreadsheet. But, you know, when you merge in two big companies, different cultures, working in an environment where you're laying off people and trying to communicate strategy and that kind of thing, it's very hard. But I think, just coming back to what we were talking about earlier, I see grounds to be still reiterate, you know, if you look at what's going on, you know, the Anglo-American bid, you know, if we're in an environment where people are worried about inflation, then, you know, you look at commodity exposure in the FTSE. That's good. Higher interest rates, good for banking shares. You know, you look at rising oil price, good for oil. AstraZeneca, which is the biggest company, pretty defensive business, and then you've got all that yield support on top relative to other markets. You know, and then, you know, if you keep getting these bids, then you know, relatively speaking, I can't, you know, if America sells off in a big way, then I don't see the FTSE 100 going up a lot. But it's good. I think it's looking good, looking quite good. Now, I think, you know, if you actually look at the environment, I personally feel the most bullish about the FTSE that I have for a while. And you can say, well, it's all very well, you know, they're at a record high, and, you know, but it's a record high that's been a long time coming, and a lot of ups and downs and volatility in between. But I just think that the fundamental support now, you know, if we do become more value focused and less story focused, then I feel, having previously been a real enthusiast of American shares, I don't feel enthusiastic towards American shares right now.
Fair enough. Well, I appreciate that. What your comments there, Henry? You were just on the
conversation. Yeah, I've got to say, actually, Phil, that's a really insightful comment on the FTSE and the structure of it, because We are persistently talking down the UK, and yet, as you've just identified, that FTSE 100 makeup should be fairly well supported in a high inflation environment. I've got quite a large weighting towards commodities in my own portfolio. I've got a large weighting towards financials in my own portfolio. And you've got cheap businesses with good yields on them. You compare that to America, and everybody in the world wants to own Microsoft and Apple and Google and Palantir, and they are covered to death. They're priced for perfection. And I think I saw a comment the other day on Twitter, which was comparing, I think, Facebook and Google, who had just put out results. I might have the names wrong here. But one had
Meta.
missed their earnings forecast. One had missed the earnings forecast and gone up 10%. The other had hit their earnings forecast and dropped 10% on the same day.
Henry, it was Meta and Tesla. Meta and Tesla.
That was it. Meta and Tesla. Yeah. And it just makes me feel as though the US market and a lot of these big names that are in the US market are being traded like gambling chips. They're not being analyzed as investments at all. Whereas in the UK, I think companies are being analyzed for their actual underlying fundamental performance a lot better. And there is a valuation discrepancy there. So, yeah, I think that's a really insightful point.
I completely agree with you. There was some commentary about Tesla. I'm not sure which day it was. Was it Monday or might have been Monday after I'd been to China and the markets moved. And Tesla moved by a value of more than 95 billion. Yeah, not sure if it was pounds or dollars, but that's the equivalent of one of our FTSE stocks going from zero to hero. You know what I mean? You know, how many stocks do we have over 100 million in the UK stock market? Three? Is it around three, Phil? Maybe four, if we're lucky.
Yeah,
We've got
in
BP,
that way.
Shell, AstraZeneca. I don't know what HSBC is.
HSBC, maybe.
Yeah, so maybe four. It's scandalous that, you know, like that 90 billion pounds worth of valuation moved on a stock like Tesla. Crazy. Right, I'm going to start with you, Phil, if we may. You want to go with one of your stocks, mate, and tell us where in the world you want to go, what you want to talk about. And we'll sit back and listen, and hopefully, you can add a bit of whatever it is that we had when you finished this little.
Okay. But having just said about my lack of enthusiasm for American shares in general, I've picked an American share.
Because why have you contradicted yourself before you start? Come on.
Well, I've just said, I feel unenthusiastic towards American shares in general.
Yeah.
However, I'll caveat with saying that this sort of fits in with more of a value bias.
Okay.
And the share that I'm talking I'm going to talk about is eBay. Okay.
Ah, I see. Let me just say this to the folks that are not on YouTube. Please come over to YouTube now because Phil's wearing a new top. I'm hoping he's going to say he's bought it from eBay, but he probably hasn't. But come and have a look at it anyway. Continue, Phil.
I have not bought it from eBay. Not there's anything wrong buying stuff from eBay, by the way.
You can buy new stuff as well as old stuff, Phil. So no, I'm not saying you bought it secondhand, mate. I wouldn't be disrespectful.
I'm a fan of eBay.
Right, okay.
It's interesting, actually. I mean, just anecdotally, I like a lot of people. I've used Amazon a lot over the last 20 odd years. And my gut feeling, and I'm actually using eBay a lot more now to buy stuff, for the house and that kind of thing. Because I'm finding that some of the prices on Amazon now are just ridiculous. They're really, really expensive. And I'm finding eBay actually a much better home for finding stuff. But eBay has, some people will say that eBay has, it's sort of yesterday's stock. It was, this great online marketplace, and there's been a lot of competition. That's come through and the like, obviously Amazon with its marketplace, but things like Etsy, and then also businesses, what's the one on the top of my tongue now? So you've got Etsy,
This Vinted.
sorry,
Vinted.
yeah, Vinted, took me on clothing, yeah, Vinted. And It's there's different places now that you can go and shop, but eBay seems to be holding its own, and I think there's quite a good some good stuff going on with this company in that it seems to be focusing where it seems to be becoming more concentrated where in terms of it's fishing for its supper. So it's becoming very concentrated in things like trainers, auto parts, that kind of thing, and doing very well out of
Very
it.
well.
And the recent earnings of the company have been strong. There's a lot of housekeeping involved here in terms of becoming more efficient, slimming down the cost base. The sales growth is actually relatively modest, but there's a margin story here. And also a bit of an AI story, which I'm a bit skeptical on AI, but I thought it was an interesting AI angle on eBay in that now you can submit a picture of what you want to sell, and the AI in eBay will write your sales pitch for you. I thought that was quite good.
Ooh. Did
So
not
that's
know that. Did not know
yeah.
that.
So the fact it could be copied elsewhere fairly quickly, but that kind of thing. And there's some good momentum here. Earnings are expected to keep growing, and the company is throwing off a lot of cash. It's throwing off about $2 billion of cash a year, and most of that is coming in the form of coming back in terms of buybacks, so shrinking the share base. And I just think the valuation looks attractive. The shares are up 15% or so year to date, but they're still only on about 11 times earnings, forecast earnings. And I think there's a nice little sort of equity story here, where you've got an established business that is growing a little bit. At the top line, but there's a lot of growth coming through on the earnings per share, and you can buy it at a very decent, arguably cheap valuation. It's got good margins, nearly 30% operating margin still, and whilst you're chasing hot stocks on 30, 40, 50 times earnings. Something like eBay, might be worth a look.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing Podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Okie dokie. Over to you, Henry. First thoughts on that one?
Yeah,
Bit
that's a
of a
really interesting pick, Phil. I mean, eBay is a company, I'm surprised it's still forecast to grow, to be honest with you. When you sent me the figures over earlier today from SharePad, I was surprised to see that they are forecast to grow sales and 26% compound annual growth in earnings per share, which is just astonishing. And like you say, if they are starting to trim out costs, even if revenue's not growing that fast, then your cost base declines and your earnings per share grow, which makes sense to me. I do wonder about how much market share they've got in different segments. I mean, e-commerce as a concept, if you go back 20 years, it was sort of eBay or nothing. You couldn't really buy direct from many brands. There weren't many platforms around. But then, sort of 10 years ago or so, maybe a bit over that, you got things like Shopify starting to come out. So nearly every merchant was able to plug this thing called Shopify into their website. And you could have your online storefront, and you could take card payments, and you could sell your goods direct without having to go through someone like eBay, who take a cut as the middleman. And I don't know the dynamics of online retail enough to really know whether that's a trend that is accelerating and eating eBay's market share, or whether actually eBay is becoming a specialist, like you say, in things like car parts and trainers. and smaller competitors aren't able to compete with the range of products they've got.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair comment, and I think there are signs that eBay is having to fight hard to keep people on its platform. For example, you mentioned Vinted, early on, things like they sell a lot of clothing. eBay has completely waived its fees on clothes sales to keep
Now
just
that is
keep.
interesting.
That to
Yeah,
keep to
I heard
keep.
that on the radio. I listened to Capital FM when I'm doing my school run, Phil, and I heard that and I thought, did I hear that right? I heard that for the first time today, in fact, on the school run. I thought, free to do clothing, because clothing was a massive part of it as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So just revenue, they're generating the revenue. So yeah, fantastic.
And that's the sort of thing that will pull in a lot of eyeballs, because you'll get people that will shift from other platforms, or they'll have things in the back of the wardrobe that they can now sell for free, outside of the postage, of course. It'll bring people onto the platform, and when they come onto the platform, they might not just buy an old shirt or a second-hand pair of shoes or whatever. They'll go and look at what else is available on eBay and potentially, place other transactions with them. So, which I think it's quite a clever move on eBay's part, because they steal Vinted's thunder and their customer base, but they also potentially get second and third degree sales off those transactions. So I think that's quite a shrewd move on their part.
Well,
I
the
think
other bit
so.
there, sorry, but I'm going to say the other bit that they did as well, regarding the AI stuff, was when you take the picture, it moves all the other background stuff. So there's all this other stuff. Sometimes people take photos, they're not that great, but
Oh,
it
it
makes it better,
declutters.
declutters the picture. That's it. It's got enough thing, I forget what to call it now, some sort of removal tool, to
Yeah,
make it more visually appetizing.
it's the Magic Eraser, I think it's called. So Adobe and Google have got a version of this, but it's not automated. So it used to be that, a graphic designer could open up a picture, they could run it through something like Photoshop, and you can select elements and it will wipe them. And this technology's got more and more intelligent, and now you can almost, I mean, I've not used it myself in many instances, but as far as I'm aware, you can almost select an individual element. So if I took a picture of you, I could just click you, and it will get rid of the pot plants in the background and the light in the background and the books in the background. It'll
Exactly, yeah.
itemize them, and then I can tell it to put them back if I want. And it'll even clean them up if there's glare on them or reflections or whatever. It's very
Precisely that.
clever.
Precisely that. Yeah. So they've got to innovate, haven't they? Go, Phil, go.
Yeah, I think a lot about this is that, I think this is a business that has got challenges, yeah, but it's actually making a pretty decent fight of it. And I think, and it comes back to like, I think a huge thing about trying to succeed in the stock market is trading off between what's going on with the company and what the expectations are baked into the share price. And generally speaking, it's true. Low valuations imply low expectations. And I just think that if eBay can keep doing what it's doing, and those earnings forecasts come through, then I think 11 times earnings is way too cheap for a stock like this.
Yeah, fair
It is
point, fair
it is
point.
astonishingly cheap. I mean, I would have expected you to tell me that that was on a PE of sort of 20 to 25, to be honest. 11 just sounds, a bargain, frankly.
Yeah, it's come along. You've got to remember, it's come a long, long way though, Henry, in the sense of where it's been as a valued stock, market cap wise, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 25 years, it's gone like that, and now it's, it's come down a little bit. So the value of it's grown into its valuation, and now it's slowed down a tad, so yeah, so that's part of the reason. But yeah, good value currently. And if, like Phil says, some of those heavily valued growth stocks take a topple, people are going to look for value, and eBay might be one of them. Okie dokie, Henry. Where do you want to go? Do you want to go with one of your stocks first, or do you want to talk about something else? Where do you want to go?
I'm going to stay over in the US, actually.
Oh,
So
boy.
I'm
I'm the only
still,
person not going to the US today, I think, mate.
well, I know,
I'm
very
staying.
pedestrian of you, Peter.
Fair enough. Okie dokie.
I was having a really interesting conversation with a friend of mine earlier this week, actually over the weekend, and they'd been looking at a company I already own, which is the Internet Group. And I've owned this for a couple of years, and they told me I was absolutely bonkers to buy it, totally overpriced, don't see what's going on. And it's done okay, actually, over the last couple of years. But I'm not going to talk about that company. I'm going to talk about their pick. So, in looking at the firm I owned, they were doing some research on the sector. Sorry, go on, Peter.
I was going to interrupt you and say, is it something that goes on online and offline that you get told, Henry, you're a nutter, you shouldn't be investing in that stock? And one that's
Oh,
just
very.
happened just recently was Darktrace, when I think even I went, I'm out of here at, £2 odd, and everyone's telling you, Henry, you're nuts, keep away from it, it's going to tank, it's going to go out of business, it's all this litigation. What happens? It gets a takeover at £6. Yeah, and Hargreaves Lansdown today came out with good numbers. Everyone's going, oh, should we start buying that now? And again, you kept your nerve with that one as well.
I do get a
So,
surprising amount of this. I mean, Hargreaves Lansdown, just as an aside, the amount of people that have told me that Hargreaves Lansdown is overpriced, overvalued, overramped, it's a dinosaur company, it's worthless. And today they've come out with 48%, I think it was, year-on-year growth in customers.
it was a
That
bit
doesn't
shocked. I
sound
was
like a
out surprised
dinosaur to
me those
me.
numbers today, mate. I was like, wow. Obviously it's still got the other stuff going around the bubble. There's still that stuff in the periphery you've got to be thinking about. Your man that came back in the news a couple of weeks back, Mr. Woodford's coming back as a consultant now, whatever that means.
Lord preservers is what that means.
Well, we can't say too much, mate. We'll get litigated. But
Exactly.
yeah, but I've interrupted your stock. Apologies. I just wanted to just
That's
throw
all
that in
right.
there. People like to give opinions about stocks they don't own. And if you've got your money in it, you've got a different opinion to it. So anyway, carry on, mate. Sorry.
So my friend was telling me absolutely bonkers to own this company, but he'd been looking at the sector. And by the sector, I'm talking about the internet infrastructure space. And he'd come across one of the big players in the space, which was founded in 1999. And this is a company called VeriSign. The ticker is VRSN. And VeriSign is one of the largest domain name system providers in the world. Now, to give you a bit of background on what the domain name system is, a website is effectively comprised of a few components. You've got the content, the pictures and the images and the text and the links and the background stuff, that's all hosted on something called a server. Now, to find that information, you have the domain name system, which is a little bit like an address book for the internet. If you think of the Yellow Pages, if you know what the Yellow Pages is, a big book with lots of telephone numbers in it and addresses, the domain name system is a little bit like that. Effectively, it's a big log of addresses. You put the address in and it takes you to a location. That location is the website. And VeriSign run the domain name system infrastructure for some of the largest domains in the world. So they run the .com registry and the .net registry. So nearly every single .com domain and .net domain is owned and operated by VeriSign. And if you think how many .com web sites there are in the world, and just what's on those websites, this is a pretty crucial bit of the internet. Because if that domain name system fails or collapses or is interrupted in some way, just think what might happen. You wouldn't be able to get onto your banking system. The website wouldn't work. Google wouldn't be able to find it. The traffic light system would stop working. The registration for the police service and the parole service would stop working. Now, that's a slight simplification of the scenario, but it gives you an idea of just how integral this company is to the functioning of the internet. Now, that's that running of the domain name system architecture is just one part of what VeriSign does. The other part of what they do is providing critical infrastructure for the security of the internet and helping to ensure that web traffic is both verified and secure online. Now, we've all heard about the huge rise in cybercrime going on at the moment, with hackers and fake websites and fake personas and spoofing and spamming and all the rest of it, all that horrible stuff that goes on online. Well, VeriSign has got an entire division that is dedicated to researching this activity and trying to come up with solutions to prevent it and minimize it. So they conduct and publish critical research that enhances the security of the domain name system infrastructure, and regularly produce research on different risks on things like cryptographic procedures, so how you secure data and how you secure users when they're accessing these websites, and how you avoid things like denial of service attacks, which are actually surprisingly common. Basically, where a network of computers sends so many requests to access a website that it causes the website to shut down. The server can't handle all the requests, and the website then becomes inaccessible to general members of the public. Now, if that happens to your bank and you need to get into your online banking, it's tough luck, especially if you've not got a local branch near you, because you can't get online and you can't go and see them in person. So they're dealing with quite major parts of the internet infrastructure. Now, caveat to all of this is that this is one of the biggest firms in the industry, and as a result, it's growing very, very slowly. This isn't a firm that's going to be growing 50, 60, 70% a year at all, or anything close to it. The forecast sales growth, I think, is something in the region of 4 to 5% a year, compounded. Their earnings per share growth, again, they've sort of optimized their cost base. They're only forecast to grow earnings per share at 5% a year, which is better than nothing, but it's hardly going to blow the lights out. And as a result of that, I can't see a terrific amount of upside in this share. When I started doing some discount cash flow analysis on it, I sort of had a valuation maybe 15 to 20% higher than where it is at its current price, which, if my figures are wrong, which they very may well be, this hasn't really got much upside potential to it. I can't see an earnings multiple uplift. I can't necessarily see a huge expansion in growth or them moving into another sector. And because of the size of the business, I can't really see them being a takeout target. So to me, this is a business that if you did invest in it, I think it's a fairly secure bet. It's a little bit like a utility stock in that it'll be fairly steady and stable. But I also can't see it having a terrific amount of upside compared to something like, the Internet Group, who are growing at double-digit rates every year and forecast to continue for the next few years. But it was a share that, I've spent a couple of days looking at. My friend's gone and invested in it. I haven't. But I just thought it was a really interesting name.
Very interesting indeed. Any thoughts, Phil, straight off at the bat regarding VeriSign?
I agree with what Henry said. Very, very solid company. Difficult to see how it's going to go up a lot. The valuation looks pretty full. It hasn't got a lot of earnings growth. If you actually look at where forecasts are going, it's not. You need a pretty big upgrade in this to like really, really drive it higher. So I'm with Henry.
Okie dokie. Henry, did you mention if it pays any dividends at all while you're sitting waiting for it going nowhere? Because you met when Phil mentioned the Sin stock last time, when you went no chance, and you gave him a good punch across the chin for mentioning another, well, it's not a utility, but a dividend play, which wasn't going anywhere and didn't really have much of a catalyst in bats. You've mentioned a similar sort of stock in a different market. If it's not going anywhere, you've got to have something to wait for. You've got to pay a little bit of a divvy. Is there a bit of a divvy there?
I don't believe there is, Peter.
So what are you talking about it for, mate? What are we buying that one for? I'm being rude
Exactly.
now
So
because
I.
there's people shouting at the little personal machines in their offices and kitchens and the radios and all the rest of it now. I'm going, why has anyone told us about that one for? So, why? Because we should be going buying the one that you've got. That's why you've told us to keep away from
No,
VeriSign.
don't. Definitely don't go and do that, because mine's gone up a lot in the last few years. So definitely do not follow me into that, people. No, the reason I'm talking about it is
It's
because
safe and steady. Safe and
it's
steady.
a safe and steady sort of name. I don't think that this is the sort of thing that's going to fall off a cliff tomorrow, because
Right.
when
Okay.
you buy domain services from somebody. I used to work in the domain service space many years ago, and buying a .com domain isn't actually very expensive. You can get one for a few pounds a year. They're really not a high value good, and as a result, the customer base tends to be very, very sticky. Unless you shut your website down and you don't need the domain at all, you just tend to pay you 10, £15 or whatever it is a year and forget about it. The main costs of running a website are in the hosting, they're in the security, they're in the content production, they're in the traffic management and the e-commerce side of things. And so VeriSign to me, if you are a defensive sort of investor and you are concerned about, capital loss and you're a bit wary of high dividend yield stocks maybe being value traps, maybe this is a name that you want to look at as a bit of, security ballast, if you like, in your portfolio.
Now I get it, Henry. And those people are no longer shouting at their personal speakers and Alexas and other brands are out there, folks, as to why you've mentioned that one.
They wouldn't shout at me. They'll all be cheering.
Sure, yeah, you're probably right. They're probably right. Okie dokie. Right. Thank you for sharing that one, Henry. Thank you very much. And Phil for the previous one as well. So you've got two American ones. I'm going to go UK, but with a global mix here. Because of the mainstay of where this company gets a lot of its value from. So I'm going to introduce this stock fund, private equity, infrastructure investment trust, which has performed in the past 20 years almost twice the return of Berkshire Hathaway's fund, which everyone loves. Over the past 20 years, Berkshire Hathaway's produced, if you've got to change the dollars into pounds, 855% in 20 years, which is pretty handy, I think, not too bad. This particular tr investment trust has returned 1,411 in the past 20 years. And that company, that investment trust, is called 3i. It's got two complementary businesses, which is private equity and infrastructure. And current price it closed today at was £28.76. It's got a price range of 1709 to a high of 2905. And as you can see with today's price close, it's right up there near its 52-week high. It's up 18% year to date for a REIT. Sorry, not a REIT, an investment trust. Market cap's 27.9 billion. Yields 1.9%. Private equity sectors, five core sectors it's involved in: consumer, healthcare, industrial technology, services, and software. But the one I want to talk about before I crunch some, I'll tell you about some of the other numbers there, about its total returns, etc., is, and I know Phil travels over abroad quite a few times, is Action. Now, Action is the fastest growing non-food discounter in Europe. With a product range of about 6,000, and it's got about 12 million customers in the various different markets it covers. And essentially, it's a Dutch international discount store. It makes up for about a third of 3i's NAV. Now, this is where it gets complicated for me, because the NAV at the last count was £20.34. And the share price, as I've just said to you, is £28.76. In the environment we're currently in, where things that, funds, REITs, and other things that, inexperienced investors like Henry and I have picked, they're sitting at a vast discount of 40% and 50% and have been unloved for nearly 12 months. 3i is sitting at a 41% premium, folks. Yeah. That just makes me a tad uncomfortable. But I'll caveat that and contradict that by saying to you that the 3-year total returns annualize the 3i is 35.78. 5 years is 25.9. 10 years is 27%. So for me, Action is throwing off loads of cash. It's valued at about 10.5 to 12 billion as we currently speak. The market cap of 3i is 27-ish. Right. So that's where you get your third-ish of valuation. One of the things that's happened is that it's sold one of its entities called Nexi to KKR. So it's going to throw in about another 500, 600 euros. Not been RNS'd yet. Not sure why, but I can't see an RNS for it. So that's going to throw them some more cash to deal with. They ended the last period with about 660-odd million in cash to play around with. That takes it then to a billion they've got to play with. So they're not going to go off anywhere. They're going to run out of cash. And they've got loads of cash regarding other bits and pieces. But I just think I want to have this conversation with you both about the valuation of it. I've said it's done extremely well for the past 20-odd years, but right now it's sitting at a 40-odd percent premium. You know, so people that are looking at it and going, it's near at 52 or high, I'm going to buy it. It's going to carry on forever. Guys, start with you, Henry. Thoughts? 41% premium. Would you be buying 3i now? Would you be saying, you know, or what? And then next to you, Phil, please.
So I, this is a really, really interesting company. And, you know, you point out that this has outperformed Berkshire Hathaway over the last 10 years. You know, fantastic. 1,400% is absolutely astonishing. But I think the story here that the market is perhaps sort of indicating is that these net asset valuations are determined by largely by private markets. So 3i comes along and it says, you've got a waste disposal business, or you've got a bridge, or you've got, I don't know, a private toll road network, or whatever it might be. We'll buy that, and we'll buy it at a multiple of who knows what. Nobody knows. And then every year we're going to mark it up. So if we bought it at 20 times earnings, we'll mark it up to 21 and then 22 and then 23, because our secret sauce is making it more and more valuable. And nobody knows whether they'll actually be able to achieve that valuation until they come to sell it. Now, you've had a period of time where, you know, there's been lots of cheap money sloshing around. And so if somebody saw that 3i bought a waste disposal business for 20 times earnings, great, wonderful. They're the smart money, right? I'll buy it off them for 25 times. I'll go to the bank and I'll go and buy it back for even more. Only problem is that the cheap money's drying up. And there have been an awful lot of these sort of private equity alternative investment type vehicles that have had these, you know, very, very strong valuations on their assets, supposedly. But when they've come to sell them, they can't get the valuations. And having a look at the portfolio of 3i, you know, there are businesses in there that kind of raise an eyebrow for me. And now I've only had a very cursory glance at it, but you know, a waste disposal business in Puerto Rico, I think I saw earlier, somewhere in South America. And you think, well, you know, is this the best opportunity you could have found anywhere in the world? Is this some astonishing business that's got like 50% margins? Or was this just an average business that you bought? I don't know.
The discount retail was a fairly modicum business when they first got it. And I think they've done 30-fold on their investment regarding that. So the thing with private equity, you don't have to get 100% of them right. You know, no. You can get less than 50% of them right. And if they multibag your return, you can afford for some to go to zero.
Well, this is the thing. If you just get one that's a 30-bagger, everything else can go bankrupt. And,
absolutely.
You know, who cares?
It worked with Tesla. Smith's SMT with other stocks as well. You know, it can happen. Phil, you're sitting there with your tanned face, mate. Give us your views on that one before you fall asleep with me, us and Henry, talking about it. What are your thoughts on 3i premiums, conservative NAV? Where are you going with this one? Because I'm a bit like that with it.
I don't know. I this is a really difficult business to like comment on because it's got so many moving parts.
Exactly.
You've really got to sit down and have a really long look at the components of it, you know, the private equity, the action bit, the infrastructure business. You know, they always talk about, you know, how conservative they are, and you know, they take a sort of long-term sort of multiple basis, but I mean, you can argue that, the NAV premium may not be as big. That if they're being conservative, the premium's probably a little bit overstated, or could be a little bit overstated. Having said that, I think Henry makes a good point that, cheap money is a thing of the past, and that obviously brings down valuation multiples. So it'll be interesting to see, the proof of the pudding is in the selling here. What they can, they look at, they take a view of like trying to get twice their investment cost or something, over a time period. And, you look at the track record, you can't knock it. If you, if these guys were like fund managers, well, they are fund managers, and, they are managing, but if this was like a mutual fund or an investment, like a plain vanilla stock portfolio, and you put together a fact sheet with it, you think, oh, I might give these guys a bit of my money, I know past performance caveat and all that kind of thing, but fair play to them. They've done a very good job of making their investors really good money. But short of like really, really digging into it, I mean, Action looks great. I'm a massive fan of discount retail, particularly discount retail that's sort of unlisted. If you look, I mean, you just have to look in the UK and look at companies like Home Bargains, for example, and how well they do. Even like the likes of Aldi and Lidl, they're not listed on the stock market. Yeah, they've still got to make a return for their investors, but they can do things differently. They can take a long-term view to create value. Action, just looking at the results here, I'm seeing absolutely smashing it at the moment. So definitely
They are,
worth a
mate.
look, I would say, Pete.
Yeah,
Don't be
it's me
frightened. If
saying.
you're going to take a long-term view, like they say they do, then yeah, go and have a look at this one.
Yeah, I'll be
They're
waiting
doing
for
a
the.
good job.
Yeah, I'll be waiting for the market to have a little wobble and then coming off a premium, maybe, or the premium being discount being reduced drastically. I don't think they'll be looking to sell Action at any day soon because it's the main cash cow for them. In its financial year 2023, Action generated net sales of 11.3 billion euros. And in 11 weeks so far, data for the 11, first 11 weeks of the year, net sales were 2.5 billion, 21% ahead. So Action is creating all the action for 3i. That's my little joke of the day. Anyway, so complicated one. Just wanted to get your views on it. Massive premium. It's not a, we don't tip or recommend shares here. They're just research ideas. So that's me done with that one. Phil, your next stop, please, sir.
This is a very controversial company, but I'm not saying it's, and it's one that I think is just what, but also very interesting, given what it does and given the market that it plays in. And it's a UK company, and it is a power station, power operator, power generator. Drax is the company. DRX is the ticker. The bit of a history, this used to be Britain's biggest coal-fired power station. It's based up in North Yorkshire, next to the old Selby coalfield, which was a fantastic, rich coalfield many, many years ago until it got shut down. And doesn't burn any coal anymore. It burns wood pellets. And this is where the controversy comes in, because it buys a lot of these wood pellets from forests in America, ships them over, burns them, generates electricity, but it's classified as renewable because the CO2 that comes off the burning part of it is re supposedly replaced by the planting of new trees. And a lot of people think that's absolute BS. And I know exactly where they're coming from. Having said that, this so the Drax power station is, We all know in the UK we are struggling with our power assets and the ability to keep the lights on. There's a lot of old power stations that are closing down. There's a demand for electricity is going up. And Drax still produces 4% of the nation's electricity. It also is a very valuable asset in that, unlike wind or solar, it's a bit like a gas station. It can turn on at, at very short notice. So it's very good in terms of its flexibility. And the company churns out very decent profits and cash flows because it's part of the renewables regime, and it gets government subsidies and guaranteed floors on the power price that it can sell. And on the basis of its historic earnings, it looks really cheap. It's on less than 5x earnings. Problem is that the earnings are going down because the power prices that they're contracted for are a lot lower over the next couple of years than they have been in the past. What's interesting is the bit about, is how serious, an incoming government, and it looks like we're going to have a new government, is going to be on things like carbon capture and storage. Because Drax is putting together a proposal for carbon capture and storage, not only in the UK, but also in the US. And if it can do that, and it gets the and if the subsidies are still there, and it can convince the government that it needs it to keep the lights on, then I think there's some value here, because it's still, it's a 2.6 gigawatt power station, 2,600 megawatts. It's big. It's at the moment, it's not the kind of thing that you want to go off grid. We need reliable sources. The question is whether it can be done at a cost that the taxpayer can withstand. And it's very binary. I think if the government backs it, if a new government backs it, then I think the shares are cheap. If it doesn't, then I think it's way overvalued at 2 billion market cap. And so it's a very tricky share to weigh up. And I'm sure there'll be some investors looking at it on the basis of its multiple, very low earnings multiple, and looking at what it actually does and its role in the security of electricity supply in this country, and thinking actually there's some strategic value there. Very risky, but quite interesting for a brave contrarian to have a look at.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEAKS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to SharePad today using the Twin Peaks promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
I struggle with this one, Phil. I really do. Primarily because of the costs of the biomass units, isn't it? They're going to convert them, that project that you talked about, and the cost of that, and then the cost to the actual individuals such as yourself, you and I, regarding the electricity we've got to pay for going forward. And there's some debate as to the fact it's going to cost more for us to consume electricity what comes from these projects. And I'm all for investing in renewables, and I think, I see so many people on Twitter slash X absolutely pounding the table every single day about, all things to do with renewables are a complete waste of time. And I completely disagree with them, but I don't get into that debate because there's no point speaking to fixed mindsets kind of people. But this project, I'm not sure about it, Phil. Even to the point when I've looked at it before, and as you said, they go over, overseas to get the wood pellets to ship it over here to then burn it. The whole thing doesn't make any sense. And this goes back to this: how do we measure what classed as renewables, and what do we measure as ESG? And just, like you say, another big question is, will the next government actually back the idea? And if they don't back it, like you say, it's gone. But where do we go for our energy? Are we going to go back, wave across the water again, and start speaking to Germany, who then has to speak to Russia to get some energy over here so we can put the lights on at Christmas? You go for it,
Well,
Bill.
I mean, this is we are importing electricity now. We
I
import,
know, I
we're
know. We
importing
need to
from
resolve it.
France, you know.
I know that. Oh, and for 30 odd years, we've had the chance to build an infrastructure to make sure we don't have to rely on external forces. We still haven't got there.
See,
So
Drax will put
someone's gonna have to invest in Drax and other forms of energy, Phil. And maybe this
Drax is
is
going
it.
to
I don't
turn
know, but it
around.
just looks a bit expensive to me.
Sorry for interrupting. Sorry.
No, go for it. Go for it.
Drax is, they're going to argue saying, look, you need a diversified mix of energy sources. So you need wind, electric, I'm sorry, wind, solar, nuclear, gas, and they'll throw biomass into the mix. And that what they'll say is, they say, look, we've got our own biomass pellet business as well. So they've got a degree of vertical integration. They're selling biomass across the world now. And sometimes it's about challenging, assumptions. There's a lot not to like about this, but sometimes if you turn it around and argue it the other way, look at the other side of the argument, the environmentalists hate it, for obvious reasons. But unless the government gets itself in gear, then we've got real issues here. We've got real issues in this country, in terms of keeping the lights on. And so there's a very interesting asset here that's on the stock market, $2 billion equity value, about $1 billion of debt, which is being paid down because the cash flows are so good. They reckon that there's a minimum, sort of 500 million of EBITDA business, and there's not a lot of DAR in this business, by the way. So a lot of that EBITDA is proper profit. So even at £3 billion asset value, you look at it on a normalized basis, if they're going to subsidize solar and wind, which they are, and they subsidize this at an affordable level, and it's affordable, this is a cheap asset. And then you get the carbon capture stuff, which is very expensive. You're talking multi-billion pounds of outlay to do this. But they're not going to do that unless they can get a return on it. Again, it's just, it's an idea. It's an idea,
Absolutely.
one that a lot of our listeners and watchers might just think, I'm not going anywhere near that. But I'll throw it, just throw it in. Sometimes you got to go where you're not always comfortable,
Agreed.
and you dig.
You see, I've got to disagree with both of you here, actually, again. So
Go
you
for it,
two
go
are
for it, go.
extremely bearish
Sitting
on
there
this.
quietly putting your boxing gloves on. Go for it, Henry.
I actually did some research on this company last month for a friend, and made a buy recommendation on it. I mean, I don't give financial advice, but I was asked my opinion, and I think this is a buy all day long. The argument about it not really being proper ESG friendly energy to me is, I know what they're saying. They were caught burning ancient woodland, I think, in Canada. They chopped down ancient woodland, shipped it over here, turned it into pellets, incinerated it, and everybody's up in arms. And frankly, quite rightly so, shame on them. But they don't have to do that. They could actually plant sustainable woodland. There is such a thing as sustainable woodland that you can plant and regrow. When I was in Oxford, I worked for a guy that used to deal with sustainable woodland and coppicing, and he helped farmers to plant woodland specifically to be burned, and then regrow new woodland to replace it. Now, it still does have, smog problems. You still do put pollution out. It's got the carbon issues, and like you say, you ship this stuff over here on a giant oil tanker, and goodness knows what the environmental footprint is. But my underlying point is that you don't have to do it like that. You could plant the trees over here if you wanted to and burn those. And at the
Good
end of the
point.
day, like you say, we all want electricity. I don't think there are many members of society that actually want to go back to the Stone Age, without hospitals, without lights, without computers, without cars. We're not going to have clothes without electricity. None of modern society will work without power. And if we're not going to use oil and gas, and we're not going to use coal, and we can't get enough solar and wind power online, there aren't that many alternatives left. And I see the arguments against different power sources all the time. They've all got the drawbacks to them. But to me, burning biomass, actually, providing you replant some to replace what you've burned, it's a sustainable, it's potentially more sustainable than digging up coal or burning oil and gas. So I quite like this company.
Fair points, well made there, Henry. Any thoughts about those comments, Phil?
Very fair points.
Cool. Okay, Henry, we're going to take a break here now. You're going to have to carry on with the vocals, mate, and bring us up to speed with the charity because I didn't mention them in the last pod when Jamie and
Oh,
Chase was on
well,
here. So
ladies and
bring us up to speed
gentlemen,
where we're at, mate. I know there's some people been making some donations.
our charity. So, for those of you that are tuning in for the first time or that haven't listened for a while, in return for tuning in to the Twin Peaks podcast, Peter, Phil, and myself ask for a small donation to a charity of our choice each year. And this year we are raising money for Centrepoint, who are the UK's leading youth homelessness charity. Now we have a Just Giving page set up, which is www.justgiving.com/page/ Twin Peaks Challenge 24. You can go online and you can donate a few pounds. That's all that we ask, a few pounds from each of our listeners to go towards helping people that are really in quite dire circumstances, and help to give them a support network to give them a secure, loving, safe home, and give them the right start in life, really. And so every couple of weeks, I'm very privileged to be able to come on the show and give an update on where we are. And since the last podcast, we've had some fantastic news and some fantastic donations. We've had Michael in Ayrshire, who has donated £20 plus £5 gift aid with the comment, "Thank you all very much for your podcasts. I really enjoy listening and hearing your great insights and ideas." Thank you very much, Michael.
Thank
We've
you,
had
Michael.
Terry Quigley, £35 plus £8.75 gift aid. Great podcast, and I get loads from it. Hope to see you in Cambridge again soon. Thank you very much, Terry.
Welcome, Terry.
We've
We will see you in Cambridge maybe in June,
Fingers
I think, is
crossed.
when we're going to go for next time. A little collective.
We've had a couple of comments down, and I think they've anonymized what they've actually donated, because I do occasionally get emails saying that somebody's donated, and then when I log on to the page, I can't see what they've donated. So we've had White Gold Wielder, "Great podcast, chaps. Always a pleasure to listen into the car on the way to work." But I can't see how much you've donated, White Gold Wielder. So thank you, no matter what it is. But thank you very much, and thank you for your support of the show. And we've had an
Thank you, thank
anonymous
you.
comment as well. "Love the pod and a worthy cause to support." So thank you from whoever that was. But
I
most
think that was
excitingly of all,
I think that was Marbin 100, Mark Bentley. So I'm going to
was
say a
it?
big thank you to
Yes.
I think that was Mark. So thank you ever so much, Mark, and thank you for your continued support. of the podcast, and wishing you and all the team at ShareSoc all the very best for 2024.
I was going to come on to Mark. So most excitingly, a couple of days ago, I got two notifications on Twitter. I was tagged in, and I was really excited. So Mark at Marbin100, who is a director of ShareSoc, very kindly commented and said that he'd been listening to the show and he would like to donate. And could we please share the link with him, which we duly did. And Mark very kindly then went and shared that with his followers, which is really generous. And you
Absolutely.
know, if you have donated a few pounds, please do, if you know, if you have a social media following or a network that you're on, please do take a few moments just to share it with your followers, because this really is a fantastic cause, and every few pounds does help. So thank you very much for that, Mark. Sorry about that. But we've also had the reluctant investor on Twitter, who,
Yes.
in a very, very generous turn of events, is cycling all the way from, let me get this right, is it Land's End to John O'Groats?
Yes, it is. Yeah. He got in touch with me and told me
John
about it and asked
O'Groats?
if he could su support us. And I was like, absolutely, mate, go for it. So, yeah, thank you ever so much.
Yes, and so they're taking on this cycle challenge, Land's End to John O'Groats, and they're very kindly asked that people supporting him in his cycle ride donate to the Twin Peaks Investing Challenge. So thank you very much. Best of luck on the cycle ride. We're going to be following with interest, and honestly, wishing you all the very best for every step of your journey. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. Every pedal of the journey, I
Every
think.
pedal of the journey, exactly.
Phil's a cyclist, so you'll tell us I've got the right. Is that the right term, Phil? Every pedal? Every cycle?
I used to be a cyclist, so I would say.
Okay.
Yes,
What's the
doing
correct
a
term?
little bit of cycling now and again, but not much. Yeah, it is pedals. It was pedals,
Every
yeah.
pedal. Okay, there you go. All right. Thank you for that, Henry. And the total we're at now. Tell us the total we're at now, because we've broken a significant number.
Oh, well, we've just crossed over the £2,000 mark. We are at £2,185 from 44
Well
supporters.
done,
So
people.
we are 43% of the way towards our total of 5,000, towards our target of 5,000, I should say.
Brilliant. Thank you, everyone that's made a donation so far. If you please, please, please come make a donation. For listening to this podcast and all the others that you listened to historically, and the brilliant one we had previously with Jamie and Jace, please make a donation towards Centrepoint, which Henry's raising fundraising for via this pod this year. Okay, anyway, I'm going to let you have a little break here. I'm going to throw my little stock here under the bus and give you a pause for thought before telling us about your stock. Right, I'm going to talk about a stock here now. And most people want to know the name and the ticker first, but I'm going to give you a little bit of background history here. It's a Macclesfield-based firm, and it's been going since 1923. So it's done its 100-year anniversary last year, 101 years it's been running. The current chief exec took over in 1972, and they've been doing phenomenally well since then. The company is called Bodycote. Ticker symbol is BOY, boy. And essentially, what do Bodycote do? They provide thermal processing services, including heat treatment, metal joining, surface coating technologies, and operates in two segments. The aerospace, defense, energy segment offer thermal processing and application, and the automotive and general industry market segment, including pr thermal processing services and so on and so forth. And the company has geographical presence in the US, France, Germany, the UK, Sweden, Netherlands, and the majority of its revenues are split accordingly. Automotive and general industry, 55.7% ish, and aerospace, defense, and energy, 44.3%. The reason why I'm bringing this one to the attention of folks is because of what's going on geopolitically at the moment. And bearing in mind that automotive makes up 55 percent of its business, and aerospace, defense, and energy made up 44, My thinking is, given what's going on and has been going on over the past 2 years and has escalated again this year and continued, is that the mix might change somewhat and aerospace, defense, and energy might increase. And therefore, given they've already got that sizable business in automotive and general industry, that the increase would be continued in that segment, but also increased in aerospace. And that could give this particular stock a bit of a boost going forward. The current market cap is 1.3 billion. Forecast PE is 13.4. Forecast divvy is 3.5%. Interestingly, its return on capital employed is 12.1% and is above the 3-year average of 8.9. So you can see where I'm going here regarding margins that they may be increasing upon going forward. Share price today closed at £6.96. Year to date, quietly, no one's talking about it, is up 17%. Price range is £5.45 to £7.31. So looking at today's 6.96, you can see how close it is to a 52-week high. And they came out with numbers in March of this year, last month, and full year numbers were really, really good, with revenues up 8%. And operating profits were advancing 17%, and divvy was up 7%. I always like to see dividend going up by more than 10%, as I keep repeating on here. So I like to see that gets a mark of confidence regarding what's going on. I just thought that it was an interesting stock. I'm not going to go into too much detail, more details about it, because I'm conscious of the time, but I think it's one that's worth investigating because they've also started a buyback program as well. So you've got the dividends and a buyback going on. So I think it's one to investigate further, watch what's going on regarding the stock. Obviously, it's near 52-week high, so watch it. But best of all, even though it's 7% dividend increase, it's got a 36-year track record of progressive dividend growth. Everyone loves that word, progressive dividend, because you know what? They're less likely to cut it, a bit like some of the things that Henry and I have held that have gone, oh, we hold out for the dividend. And then you get, oh, we're not going to pay your dividend anymore. They've got a progressive dividend policy. So I'm being quick about that because I'm conscious of the time and I want Henry to talk about his stock. But Bodycote is a stock. I'm thinking defense wise regarding this particular entity. There's going to be incremental growth regarding that segment of their business. It may be something to have a look at if the market has a wobble or something goes wrong and the share price drops down a little bit lower than 6.96. Could be very interesting going forward. And it's been around forever and it's still doing the business and it's only 1.3 billion. And I think given Dweck's been there since 1972, I'm hoping he can stay there a bit longer and carry on growing the business. Always got plenty of people in the leadership SLT group of Bodycote to take it on going forward rather than somebody else taking it and messing with what they've done over the past 101 years. So Bodycote for me is an investing idea. Go to Phil first. Phil, Bodycote,
Well,
heard of
he's
them, looked at
great.
them ever?
Back in the day, my old profession, I was an engineering small cap engineering analyst.
Okay.
So this I never covered it formally, but I did look at it. It's a really good business. Joe Dweck, you're referring to, he's been there for,
Yep.
as you say, he's been there for years. Very highly regarded, good guy. It's just very, very good at what it does. It's quite a unique type of business. The one thing he will say though is that you don't want to own this in a recession.
Yeah,
It's
agreed.
very high fixed cost, energy intensive business. There's a lot of what's known as operational leverage in it. And it has historically been a share that's quite hard to sort of buy and hold and make money. It's definitely a trading share, this one. But good company, like it.
Cool. Because one of the things they're doing now is that you've said that about the energy. They're going to businesses now, Phil, saying to the business, we can help you save energy by you utilizing what we've got here. So they're offsetting their own energy costs by selling, you know, services. So yeah, so all that sort of stuff's going on. So I'm thinking, let's see what happens with them. But I found it very interesting. And I should have looked at this years ago. And I previously, when the shares are doing well, I've always gone, oh, it's a bit pricey for what it does. Because it's not one of them stocks, is it? It's a, you know, it's a value stock, not a growth stock, but it was priced as a value stock. Sorry, a growth stock when it's really a value. Anyway, Henry, have you ever looked at Bodycote, mate?
I have nice business, like you say. I like the progressive dividend and all the rest of it. Just looks really expensive to me. Very little growth. You know, it's priced as a growth share when, or it looks like it's priced as a growth share to me when actually there's not much prospect of massive amounts of growth in it.
The forecast PE of 13 is not too high, really. So that's not rich, is it?
No,
It's too rich.
but the forecast earnings are just so tepid, and it doesn't get me massively excited as a company.
Okay.
You know, having said that, I've got a sneaky suspicion that this could be one of those names that in within the next 12 months, someone abroad has gone,
Don't
oh,
say
we've
it.
always liked
Don't
that for
say it.
30 years, we'll
Don't
take it over.
say it. We don't want a
So
101-year-old company being taken over by some smart ass abroad, mate. Come on, and
yeah,
shredding the company.
exactly.
Macclesfield will
But
be up
yeah,
in uproar, mate. The Maccas will be having it. Don't mess with Macclesfield. Right, okay. I'm done with that one. That's an idea. Go away, research it, folks. It's not a tip. Henry, your last stop, mate. We're conscious of time, so condense it a little bit for us if you can.
I'll keep it brief. So this is a company I've been looking at for years. Never pulled the trigger on it. I've never felt confident enough to pull the trigger on it. It's a UK listed company. But it operates in the Middle East and Africa. It is Integrated Diagnostic Holdings. The ticker is IDHC. And it's one of the Middle East and Africa's key healthcare operators with operations in Egypt, Jordan, Sudan, and Nigeria. It's a company that provides services from over 550 branches across the region, and it aims to be a leading healthcare provider in the communities and regions that it serves, and to become every doctor and patient's first choice for quality, accurate diagnostic testing, and cost-effective services. Peter's doing a runner already.
Carry on.
Now, the business has always looked like a growth company to me. You know, the region is super highly fragmented. Lots of little clinics all over the place that can get snapped up. There's a rapidly growing population, and a very high disease burden, I'm sorry to say. You know, it's an area that's got problems with housing, with healthcare, and also lifestyle related conditions relating to diet and the harshness of the environment and general living conditions. And all of this means that there's a huge demand for reliable healthcare services in the region. Now, the share's been on and off my radar for years. It's always had a good yield. I think it's currently yielding 7+ ish%. And it's due to grow sales at 22% compounded over the next 3 years, according to analysts. And it's also 35% off its 12-month highs, which to me sort of indicates a potential buying opportunity. Having said
Having said,
that, the region has got a range of political issues with it, which I'm not going to go into for obvious reasons. But it's one of those businesses that it's always just really, really intrigued me. What they do seems quite defensive. And, you know, I think that this is a business that should have quite good potential over the medium term to continue growing and potentially give good returns back to investors. So, having said that, as we've lost Peter now, who's wandered off, I'm going to go to Phil. Have you ever looked at this company, Phil?
I've never looked at it, Henry, but I have to say, I wouldn't touch this with a barge pole.
Oh
It's just,
no.
it's got just too much risk. The political risk puts me off. It's very volatile, and the share price chart looks like Wile E. Coyote going off a cliff.
Not Barley Coyote. That's the best yet.
Not for me, not for me.
That is a reasonable comment, I think, and it part of that is what's put me off buying it as well. It's that political risk angle. Peter, now we've got you back. Any thoughts?
It's one of those stocks, Henry, which I see mentioned infrequently. And when it gets mentioned, it's usually when they've had the sporadic bit of good news, if that makes sense. So it's not always been a stock that's gets ramped. It's just whenever there's good news, there's a couple of people that have been secret holders of it going, "See, I was right." And then it goes and it dips off again, and there's no news, no commentary about it. It's a very quiet stock. I'm not sure it's a niche that I'm that interested in either, if that makes sense. And I'm always trying to reduce geopolitical risk with certain stocks, Henry. And I'm not saying this is a stock where it's too far to tread, or pedal to. But I could do without the potential risks, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Very
So
fair.
it's just there's loads of stocks out there. Would I choose this and go, yeah, I'm gonna throw my money, put not invest my money there, and I can sleep at night? It's not that kind of stock. So geopolitically, I'd be a case of I'd look elsewhere. And I do have some stocks that I hold in some very quite, interesting parts of the world. But this is not one I would choose to invest in because of that. I've got different reasons for choosing other stocks in sensitive places, but not I wouldn't go with this one.
Very good. I
Would you
think
invest in it
that's
eventually? Would there be a price that you would invest at in this company?
well, this is the thing. I mean, like I say, I've looked at this on and off for years. I must
Yeah.
have been looking at this for 4 or 5 years, and every time
Wow.
I come back to this political risk option,
Right,
this
okay.
political risk issue, because the Sudan has had a civil war. Egypt is right next to the Red Sea, which has currently got everything going on with it. You've had the Suez Canal crisis. Nigeria, it's the fastest growing African nation. Okay, fair enough. But as a batch of countries, this just makes me sort of suck my breath in a little bit. So the financials attract me, but I just can't get past that political risk angle. So a bit like
You've
you
got, what
guys,
have you got? You've
I've not
got
pulled the trigger on it.
Algeria, you've got Algeria, Sudan, Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia.
You see
Yeah.
now, Saudi Arabia. Yeah,
Yeah.
fairly stable country.
Right. And the others, you're like, anything could go in a minute.
Anything could
Yeah.
happen.
Like, it's just, I wouldn't say red flags, Henry. I would say there's too many amber
Yeah.
flags there for me.
Yeah.
And any of those could go red any minute. And when the market goes, I mean, you're asleep in your little bobos, having a little nice sleep at the weekend, all kicks off. You wake up Monday morning, you haven't seen the news because it's in certain areas, and you go, why is that down 35%? And then it's across the news,
Yeah.
or the BBC's chosen not to report it, So yeah, I think the three of us will be like looking that way at another stock rather than going for that one.
Yeah, and this is what I come back to, But still,
Okie
interesting business.
dokie. Okie dokie. Now we've got to make a mention to our other sponsor. And in the next pod, just so you're all listening, Henry will be talking about the month of April's Twin Peaks Challenge winner for the month. I'm still waiting for t at Tiger Want to tell me which book he wants and to send me his email. So if anybody's following at Tiger Want, please get him to get in touch with me. I've tried my best. Open Twitter, he's replied to me. DMs, no, nothing. Ask him to come back to me. So you're gonna do that next pod, Henry,
Next pod.
127, for the winner of April, the month of April, which will be an interesting month because loads of stocks have done really well. But I've got to give another mention. I'm not in a t-shirt this week, but I might wear it. It's in the wash. About a Powder Monkey Brewery Co. Go on the website, which is www.powdermonkeybrewing.com. Put Twin Peaks in there, all one word, and you can get a 10% off your batch of beers, ales, and assorted other bits and pieces. And I saw a picture, was it a week or so ago, 2 weeks ago, Henry? I thought you'd bought a batch of beers for Steve Hare, maybe?
I did,
Yeah?
yes. My father
Very
in law, my
pleased there.
mother and
Straight away, took a nice
father-in-law.
little picture of it. So did you use a discount code though, Henry? Did you use
Of
a discount
course I
code?
did.
Oh, good
Of
man. Good man. Good man.
course I did.
There you
For
go.
those
Right.
listeners that aren't sure what to select in that vast range of options, because they really do have a vast range of options, I got Steve a Creative 12, and you can make your own Creative 12, so you can select one of every type of beer. You won't get quite every, because they've got more than 12 brands, but my favorite's got to be that Hop and Hooker. I mean, honestly, that is a seriously tasty ale. If anybody out there isn't sure where to start, you could do a lot worse than starting with Hop and Hooker. So, yeah, go for it. Get on that site, get ordering those beers because, yeah, well worth it.
Brilliant. And I just want to give a big shout out to the co-founder of Powder Monkey Brewing Co., Mike McGeever, who's currently having a little look and see operation today. So I'm hoping it goes well for him and anyone else that's having ill health at the moment. Just want to wish you all the very best as we head towards better weather and better times. And just want to say to everyone that's been listening to this podcast, thank you ever so much for your continued support. Regarding it, I want to say thank you to Phil for being here with me on this marathon. I think it's turning into a marathon. This one is quite a long one. And Henry Viola here as well on the pod. And we look forward to your feedback. Some fantastic feedback for the last one. Look forward to you giving us feedback on this one. And if you like it, please make a donation. If you've listened to it and enjoyed any aspects of it, please reshare it, retweet it. Let us know what your thoughts are about it. And like and subscribe on the YouTube channel. That is the end of podcast 126. And we'll see you in the month of May. Phil, thank you ever so much. Henry, thank you ever so much. Both take care. All listeners, take care and God bless you all. Cheers and bye-bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.